11:16 SEN, Inside Football, full-on footy analysis with Adam Cooney and Mark Fine.
Good morning, football fans, and especially the dads out there. Big Father's Day, welcome to all of the pops. It's not Adam Cooney in today. Troy Zantuck joins me on this off week for football, but not an off week for Inside Football. The rain might be coming down, so be careful out there. You know, a lot of families get out for lunch or dinner in the family car. Give it a few minutes extra. Enjoy Inside Football as we review the seasons of the teams that are bowed out and have an early look at the four finals that make up week one of the finals. I welcome Troy Zantuck back to 11:16 SEN. How are you, Zanners?
Great to be you, Finey, I've got to say. Warming the seat for the great man.
Well, I can only assume that Coons pulled up sore after, I think I know the kick as well, on Friday night at the EJ Whitten Legends game. He was 30 metres out on an angle, and the beautifully accurate kicking skills of Adam Cooney just went off a bit, and I think he might have gone off with a torn heart muscle.
A torn heart muscle for Cooney.
The broken heart, it just didn't sail through.
Highly entertaining, Finey, and a goal fest, wasn't it, the EJ game?
I think they're now sort of in the Harlem Globetrotters class of sporting event, but people love watching the Globetrotters, and they love watching this big Bartell barrels.
Oh, Jimmy Bartell, take me back to yesterday with the barrels.
But I tell you what, you can't concoct. You can't concoct the way the game ended. Not the fact that it was close. That's concoctable. But Jonathan Brown's final shot at goal was on angle impossible. He chose to go with the drop punt. The Vics needed him to kick it to win. And I reckon, we were talking about it after the game, I don't reckon there's a single player in the AFL that I would trust with that kick. In other words, it took a former AFL footballer to be the only person who could put it through, and I reckon he's one of the few people in the world that could have slammed through a drop punt from that angle.
Well, that trademark waddle, Finey, it never looked like missing, did it?
It was a magnificent kick, and it came after a brilliant one-handed mark about 2 minutes earlier where he showed his strength. With one hand, he was controlling the snake man, Danny Southern, and with the other hand, he plucked a cherry.
And it was, and that come from the Uzay banana.
Yeah, that's
possibly
right.
After the siren.
Yeah, that last goal, the goal that he kicked.
Yeah, it took me back to Malcolm Blight, to Kerry Good 1980.
All those controversies came rushing back. But on this case, it wasn't a case of the umpire not hearing it. It was, why did the timekeepers blow the siren at that point in time?
Yes.
You know, because I think the quarter might have ended about 2 minutes prior to that on the scoreboard.
It was great theatre, but wasn't it?
No, it's just great fun, and the players loved it. And Carey's address at three-quarter time to Luke Darcy was Luke's response was fantastic. He got stuck in him. You are hopeless. You're no good. And Darcy said, "I wasn't on." All for a great cause.
Yeah, I thought the Duck thought he had it in the bag, just quietly, didn't he? He thought, he had the strut, the swagger.
It was great.
Timmy Watson's acceptance speech was hilarious too.
It was all great fun. Timmy Watson, the word was at halftime that he was going to get sacked. But he shored up the numbers. It was great fun. So we're going to have a look back at the season that was from bottom to top. We're going to start with Brisbane and work our way to Melbourne, of course, and their heartbreaking ninth place on the ladder. Look at the teams, but we'll also be catching up with John Ralph for the latest all-important injury news, not just on Joel Selwood and his availability, but what Richmond plan to do potentially with Josh Caddy, Cale Hooker, who I believe will be right to go, a couple of other players, contractual matters, the wash-up from the Dustin Martin re-signing. And there will be a wash-up because, of course, you can't play a player, you can't pay a player a $1.3 million a year and not expect maybe at the other end to lose a player or two. Do you remember one of the probably most famous casualty associated with South Melbourne? I always call them South and I don't apologise. With Sydney signing Buddy Franklin was losing Big Mummy. But do you remember the other player that was a direct casualty of Buddy's signing. He went to GWS and now he's a Blue. Jed Lamb.
Yeah, he played some good football towards the end of the year, Jed Lamb.
Yeah, I wonder whether they'll retain him. Yeah. He, of course, was the player involved with the incident with Bashar Hooley. Was he the player?
Yes, he was, yeah. And he also got under the skin of James Sicily.
Yeah.
Against Hawthorn.
So he's played a defensive forward role generally, sort of trying to be the player to stop the conduit out of the back line. And there's certainly room for them in football. In fact, there's room for one at GWS. He's one of his former clubs, isn't there?
Yes.
As we ask the question whether or not Steve Johnson holds his spot, Matt DeBoer comes back in, you'd almost think Jed Lamb and his current guys could almost have forced a spot at GWS.
And how do you see that, Finey, with Stevie J?
I don't think they can pick him.
No.
The cards didn't fall well for him. He's not been injured. So he's been rested or dropped a couple of times. The problem is that in the last 2 weeks of the season, he was dropped for the second last game, which GWS won, albeit not convincingly against West Coast,
yeah,
but an important victory, and then brought back for the Geelong game, which they lost, you know, clearly. How does that play out at selection? I mean, those are the choices. On the other side of the ledger, Matt DeBoer plays in the win and doesn't play in the loss. What would you do if you're a selector?
Well, it's a conundrum for the GWS Giants, isn't it? You know he's been there. He's performed at the highest level. Norm Smith medalist. He can.
Gary Ayres has been there, but Hawthorn weren't recalling him during the last premiership run.
No, but good. You make a great point.
It's a joke. We know he's not on the list. But
he provides that unpredictability. And as most footballers say, Finey, there's a new season that's starting, and that's called finals.
And most coaches will tell you, don't give me the unpredictable. Give me what I can work with. And that's, you know, coaches are generally a conservative lot. And they like to know what they're getting and maybe delighted with what they get above and beyond. So banking on the unpredictable in finals. Look,
I'm trying to put a case forward for
him. No, I understand that.
The logical case to put forward is he's absolutely bereft of any form at the moment.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, that previous body of evidence that we gave is factual. By the way, we don't generally take calls on Inside Football, the full-on look at footy, but this morning is definitely in review and preview, a morning for the callers. 9429 1116 is the number to call. 0433 98 1116 via the SMS. This isn't a prize-winning experience or idea. It's about being part of the program. So almost out of respect to your football knowledge, we're not putting prizes up. We're putting you up to be part of the discussion. Johnson in, Johnson out. We're happy to start with that one and then look at the teams that didn't make the finals and revisit the 8 finalists towards the end of the program at midday. The need for a defensive forward remains. Whether or not Johnson plays, maybe then Devon Smith gets asked a question. Or maybe they look at the structure and say that we can't go into a final with Mumford in the ruck, Lobb, Cameron and Patton up
forward. Too top-heavy.
But yeah, just the nature of finals football, the drop of the ball, the ferocity with which you need to play to win, and to win a premiership, you need to win 3 finals, and GWS are looking at this year as a year in which they can win a grand final, requires ball retention in the forward line. And those players that you mentioned, Sicily and Bashar Hooley. Now, Hooley's in the final. Sicily, not. You cannot let halfback flankers rule the day.
Dictate terms, yeah.
And Toby Green's a great player, and he's great one-on-one. Ferocious, we know that. But he's not a defensive-minded player. He'll look to break the elastic the other way, won't he?
Absolutely. Well, he provides most defenders with anxiety attacks, Toby Green. But as you said, De Boer's more that lockdown defender, Finey, I think.
Well, that's it. That's what I'm saying. He's the one. He's come out of the Ross Lyon school of course, he learned his football before Ross was there. But Ross would have reinforced at Fremantle to Matt DeBoer you're a role player.
Yeah, and he plays that way. He's very selfless in what he does. And he can bob up and he can kick the one or two goals.
Spot on. In fact, he does. He often does, especially in a really good team, get off the leash. To me, he's got grand final or final joker in the pack written all over him. You often look at that player, don't you? And I hate saying the name. Nothing against Shane Ellen, the person. But yeah, we often look for that the sort of person in a final. Who is going to be the surprise packet? Because there's so much intel done on these two teams, and basically the coaches know defensively how to set up perfectly for opposition forwards. It's sent up to defenders to deliver, but it's harder to do so for somebody that is less expected. Now, De Boer won't be less expected, but he still does get under your guard when everybody's ticked their boxes for most dangerous and most likely.
Absolutely, and you speak of unlikely heroes. Paul Dear in the 91 yep. Premiership win for Hawthorn over the West Coast Eagles. You know, it was littered with superstars. You had Dunstall and Brereton, but it was Paul Dear, you know, providing a role in the ruck and forward. And yeah,
a bloke called Froggy in 1964.
Yes,
Neil Crompton.
Neil Crompton.
It's the player that can get under your guard, isn't it? So. The question is, look, do we see Jono, Steve Johnson at all in the finals? That's the question. I think they've almost come to the point where, especially with a guy like Steve Johnson, injury notwithstanding, I think they almost tell him, you know what, we're going to have to move on. Of course,
yeah.
Keep training and stay fit, but... without injuries, it's going to be hard for you to make the team. Or they bite the bullet, play him once, play him right throughout the finals. Because as you said, capable of the sublime, the ridiculous, the match winning. But that might only come in game two or hopefully for them game three, a grand final of a finals campaign. So they need to be patient. It's almost like bringing on a spinner in a test match where you're looking for wickets. You've got to give him a few overs. You can't just bowl him two overs. He gets hit a couple of times and then pack him up again. You're going to have to take some hits with Johnson and maybe wait for the gold.
Also, the bigger the stage, the bigger the performance with him. I think he likes to showboat. He likes to step up to the plate. He likes to show everybody that he's still the man. So I think he's worth one more shot.
Off the SMS, well said, guys. I think De Boer is a good player, the best tackler in the comp. Stevie J, not a shadow of what he was. I don't know if he's the best tackler in the comp, but for his size, he'd put an argument. Matt De Boer, pound for pound, he's a very good tackling footballer.
And he's courageous too, Finey.
He knows his limitations. He's not fast. He's built like a midfielder who's never played in the midfield. He's played a lot of football, existing on other roles on the field, whether it used to be back pocket, wasn't always up forward, whether it was a back pocket. I think he tried run with on the ball for a while and probably less successful because of his size, not because of his tank, but some of the players that he was put on were able to break free. The midfielder got bigger, Matt De Boer didn't, and seems perfectly suited for the forward defensive role that we know Ross Lyon throughout his coaching career has liked so much.
But you've got to give a lot of credit to De Boer restarting his career at GWS and actually, you know, getting into that 22. It's a tough 22 to break into.
Yeah, I mean, they rolled the dice with a couple that you would have thought were past their use-by dates, Tendai Mazungu and Matt De Boer. Generally, when you're excused from a club like Fremantle, who in 2016 finished well down the pecking order, you're not expected to be picked up by the side considered by most to be the pre-season premiership favourites in GWS. But, yeah, there's a chance that Matt De Boer has a famous September. We're going to take a break, come back and get stuck straight into season reviews and our first cab off the rank. They might be the Wooden Spooners, but there is genuine optimism that Brisbane are set for a climb up the table. Brisbane Lions when we return.
On 11.16 SEN, Inside Football, full-on footy analysis with Adam Cooney and Mark Fine.
They beat us in the contested ball. That was the big thing in the game. We've been so good at that the last 4 weeks against teams, but fell away in that area tonight. You know, they got a lot of experienced players in their sides, bigger bodies. Thought we were competitive in the first quarter. We had more shots at goal. Just didn't kick as accurately. In the third quarter, there was, I think, one point in it. But second quarter, blown away, particularly on turnover, and a lot of it a bit unforced by us. That's guys just taking the game on. Last week, I thought we were terrific in that area, but tonight, not so good. It was the spirit of the players. They came here on a mission today to try and win the game, as we always do. Every game we've played this year, we've tried to win. And today, the effort over four quarters, the resilience to stick at the game when you're 27 points down. I think we were at some point in time in the third quarter. Is that right? Start of the last, was it? Yeah. Okay. And to keep believing and persisting, it's a great day for our footy club.
Great to hear Chris Fagan. He has been certainly one of the success stories of Brisbane this year. First talking about the loss to Geelong, but then their best win of the season, that famous win over Essendon at Etihad, round 15. It was the one that sort of put a stick in the spokes at the Essendon club for a little while, and one that Brisbane can really look at going forward as an example of being away from home, down at three-quarter time, but character got them over the line. That certainly was their best win of the year, I would have thought, Zanis.
You're absolutely right, Finey. And a big part of that win, a bloke called Dane Zorko, who just won the BNF at the Brisbane Lions. He was absolutely outstanding and was with the All-Australian debut. He was just one of their prime movers, Finey.
Adds probably what all midfielders would love to have, he has already, which is goal sense and goal-kicking ability. His season, and I'll check up in a moment, north of 20 goals, I would have thought, marks him as a more dangerous midfielder than those that get their 30, 35 possessions a week. And a lot of people were talking about All-Australian selection. I don't think too many were upset that Zorko was in the team, by the way, but pointing to a Clayton Oliver, who I thought was unlucky to miss out. But let's be fair, and Dane Zorko hit the scoreboard a lot more often than Clayton Oliver, so you can understand why somebody like him would make the team. Now, by the way, if you're heading to the local football today, and there's plenty around, including two great VFL finals, make sure you pick up a 4-20, the famous pie, during the game at halftime or even after the game. It's a familiar taste and a favourite with football fans, always has been, always will be. What is the prediction going forward for Brisbane? Now, I know a lot of football scribes have suggested that Brisbane is a team that is going to work their way up the ladder in the next few years, and when you're on the bottom, the only way is up. So, of course, they'll get off the bottom in due course. They're not lamentably stuck to the wooden spoon, but I'm probably not as bullish about the Brisbane Lions as others are, based on their need still to develop key position players and now probably key forwards.
Yeah, I was interested to know what you thought on the development of Shacky and Hipwood this year, Finey. What was your take on those two?
Well, it's an interesting story, Shacky. The best thing he did all year for the football club was re-sign, because it was after his re-signing that the club seemed to gain some self-belief, and the word was that he was keen not to re-sign. In fact, after he re-signed, he came back to Melbourne for just an opportunity to probably recharge the batteries and then rejoin the team later in the year. He provided nothing on-field, but at least off-field, he was a good example of a young man who believes in the program, believes in Chris Fagan, and wanted to throw his lot in with the Brisbane Lions. That being said, he might be traded. The word is that there are a couple of clubs looking to bolster their forward stocks that are going to take him not on what he's done at league level, which is very little, but on the fact that he was a top two draft pick and obviously through junior development, a very impressive forward. Beautiful kicker goal. He's never lost the ability to kick a set shot, which is certainly an asset. Eric Hipwood is a fascinating case study. 2 years now of highlights, and for people that get their football in highlight form, in other words, watch their own team religiously and then pick up the highlights from other games, you'd think Eric Hipwood is an absolute star. I remember that when Peter Bozzusto started at Carlton all those years ago,
it was a human highlight reel.
And they showed the highlights on a Saturday night on the news, you would have thought that
World beater.
Donald Bradman had been reincarnated, taken up football instead of cricket.
Yeah.
Now, he was a great player.
He was.
Bezusto, but generally his highlight reel was also his possession reel. There wasn't a lot of, in and under simple team link work from Bezusto. That's great. That was the era. But in the modern era, Eric Hipwood's 8, 9, 10 possessions a game, which is generally what he gets. He averages just a tick under 10 possessions a game, is not. It's not enough at league level. He give me a player who has the put the old air commas up for this one.
Yeah,
the uncanny knack of bobbing up, rather than somebody who survives on the high mark, the 60-metre goal, the unexpected, the brilliant. I just like somebody who can week in, week out, hammer out good numbers and give you a sort of return as the tall, higher forward. I don't call them centre-half forwards anymore, but the idea would be for Hipwood to play higher up the ground and Shacky or another key forward to play closer to the square. And at the moment, Brisbane don't have reliability in either. Shacky has done nothing. Hipwood's done plenty, but not enough. So
just on Hipwood,
need to build.
Obviously, the magic word, he needs to build up his upper body strength, but the delivery to him isn't great either, is it?
I don't subscribe. It's a pretty good midfield. I wouldn't mind to be fed by.
Well, they finished on the bottom.
Yeah,
Ball's not getting down there. Great deal.
Yeah, inside 50s. Oh, it's a stat that I can take or leave. I would not mind to be serviced by Rockliffe, Beams, Zorko. Lewis Taylor had a great season. Hipwood doesn't work hard enough on the number of leads he makes to, and he actually is a hard-working forward. He covers a lot of ground, but repeat leads to try and lose an opponent, at the moment not in his makeup. But I just don't think he has the instinct of getting the easier possession up forward. I remember observing Michael Hurley when he started and was playing forward. All of his work was outstanding up forward, courageous, high-flying, brave, to the point of stupidity, difficult, but he didn't have the instinct of losing his opponent and just bobbing up and copping that one on the chest. You know, the 20-metre pass, the one you break free. Have a look at Josh Kennedy. He's a complete forward. Yes, he has to take the contested mark. Yes, he has to pick it up off the carpet and kick a goal as well. But added to that, how many times do you see Kennedy just break loose and be on the end of a dink kick up forward? Hipwood's got plenty of good midfield talent ahead of him. How often has Eric Hipwood just
copped a dink? He probably doesn't lead up far enough.
Yeah, but I just don't. He works hard enough. I don't think he gets it.
From what I've seen, he understands it well enough. He leads to the wrong places.
That's it. I don't think he quite has in his makeup yet. Mm. And it's 2 years now, and yet becomes problematic. It's a similar discussion we had about Jesse White for a lot of his career. All of the trademarks of a great forward. I mean, can pick the ball up on the half volley, can mark overhead, can kick like a mule. Mm. Where's the ball on the chest? Just, you know.
Yeah.
That where's the simple? Where's the simple? We know the difficulties he's capable of. You know, people used to say, look at Jesse White, pick that up on the half volley. And I'd ask, why is he getting to the ball on the half volley?
But just as a contemporary of Eric Hipwood, I'll throw up Joe Danaher.
Yep.
It took a couple of years for him to grow into his skin.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If he can track like, no one's getting rid of Eric Hipwood. But people are writing him up very favourably. And I would have said the same of Joe Danaher, that, you know, he needs to continue to develop. He's developed into now one of the best forwards in the game.
Absolutely.
Let's hope for Brisbane, Eric does the same. It's not writ in stone, and when it happens, Brisbane will climb up the ladder. Off the SMS, Hipwood is 19 fine. Any tall forward under 20 is just a highlight reel. Absolutely. Brisbane have got a potential, a future, not star, because he has star qualities already, a future regular match winner in Eric Hipwood. I think Eric only kicked four goals once this season in a game, and it might have been that game against Essendon. But he's not a match winner. He's not really contributed to any results yet. 2 years in, and don't worry, there's potential for him to become that great forward. But I've got to say, the concern I have is, in 2 years, we haven't stepped forward in that department. The goals are still spectacular. The wheeling around and kicking 60 metres is still there. The arch, the back, and the speed is still there. But you know what? I've been around long enough to see Daniel Bandy. I saw a bloke called Spencer White kick a couple of goals for St Kilda.
Yeah, against Richmond, wasn't it?
Yeah,
he kicked three.
It's probably more in the VFL. One of, you know, breakaway speed, Franklin-esque, 6'5", never get more than a game or two of league football. So I'm not saying Hipwood is there in terms of a bust, but he's certainly not there in terms of having got on the bus yet either. And that's why I combine that with Shacky's situation and have some concerns. But for the rest, I think the back line's beautifully serviced by Andrews, and McStay. McStay's a strong unit, very, very promising. I love the way Lewis Taylor has refound his best form. We've spoken about Zorko. Beams is a courageous captain.
One who I really liked this year was North Ballarat product, Jared Berry. He looks the goods. Yep.
And we know hasn't withered and impressed in his short time in football. So Brisbane, there is plenty of cause for optimism. They will climb up the ladder. But, of course, when you are on the bottom, that's where you have to head. And they do need to solve the problem of Shacky, no return, maybe to be traded. Hipwood, learning the trade, let's say that. Key forwards are necessary to win games of football. So until they get a couple of key forwards, we wait to see. And a good point here, he'd be awesome with a supporting key forward. The other problem for Eric Hipwood is he's going to get very good opponents until there's another good key forward. Well, Josh Walker went forward this year and did a job. Stephen Martin is expected to leave the club, come back to Melbourne. Footscray could be the beneficiaries, Western Bulldogs. But it looks like the big American may be headed to Brisbane.
Is it Rod Mason Cox?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
So watch this space. Let's move on. And in second bottom position is the other team from southeast Queensland. And I think we're all a little bit more concerned about the Suns.
11-16 SEN. Inside football. Full on footy analysis.
I was pleased on two fronts. One, because I think we a lot more scoring shots, so we dominated a bit of the play. I suppose the downside of that, we didn't take our chances. But I give Hawthorn their credit there. I think their pressure in the last quarter was as good as I've seen. We didn't, at times, didn't handle it as well as we could have, but I thought, as a young team learning, I thought we didn't wilt, and then we're able to respond for that. So that was part of the education process we're going through, and the leaders stood up. So overall, I was really pleased with what we're able to.
I think it's too much to ask. I mean, we expect a lot more than that. What we do is respect Port Adelaide and what they're doing. They showed us what a top four side looks like. They play a brand of footy that we're trying to implement. I think they had something like 46 takebacks in their front half for 11 goals, six or something.
Dean Solomon, on the back of Rodney Eade, the only team with two coaches for the year, and I guess the two words that really stood out for me from Dean Solomon were doo-doo.
Yeah, it pretty much summed up the year, didn't it, for the Gold Coast? It was just a diabolical year all round.
Couldn't have worked out worse. Gary Ablett, by the end, a player who was pretty keen not to be there, to be honest. Whether you look at Gary Ablett's time at Gold Coast differently because of the way it ended is in the eye of the beholder. But the reality is, one of the problems with Gary Ablett's time there, and this is no reflection on Gary Ablett, is what it meant for the rest of the midfield. And it seems to have developed a midfield of players who like it given the ball rather than getting the ball themselves. And without Jared Lyons, who came in from Adelaide, when Gary Ablett wasn't playing, goodness knows who would have been in and under getting that bloody ball.
Well, it was completely dysfunctional, wasn't it? their midfield this year, finally. But just on Gary Ablett, the next chapter of his football career, is there a next chapter?
Well, I think that's going to be up to Geelong, really, to see whether or not they can accommodate him. Of course, they'd like to accommodate him, but they also need to be aware of their own player development and their own, I don't think, budgetary concerns. I don't think salary cap will come into it. I imagine Gary would be happy to fit in with what they can afford, but I imagine he'll end up at Geelong, and I imagine he'll play a lot of football forward, and I imagine that Geelong will be much better for it. But if from the Gold Coast perspective, where does it leave them? They're searching for a coach. They're searching for midfield bolstering. They would be pretty comfortable with their tall man stocks, even though this year, of course, Sam Day got that terrible hip injury during the JLT series, which meant that he didn't play. They'll welcome him back next year. Sam May has recommitted to the club, which is very important for the co-captain. I think they'd be concerned that Rory Thompson went backward this year, because coming into the year, one of the real things that they could pin their hat on was the fact that they had two big forwards in May and Lynch, Day and Lynch, and May and Thompson up back.
Well, the spine was, just on looking at it from the start of the year, the spine looked great.
Yeah, that's right. Too much run out of the back line, too much dash and bravado. The whole team had too much run forward, not run back. From a midfield with Aaron Hall and Tuke Miller and at times Martin, who's finished the season off pretty well, Jack Martin, it should be said, to the back line with Lemons and Saad. All right, Saad's the dasher, we know that. He's a good player, Adam Saad. But Colin Jasny, a lockdown player, he became a player who'd run with gay abandon. It was Lemons used to get the ball and off he'd be to the races. Harbrow likes running off to the races. You know what? If you're not hitting targets, have a guess what's left back in defence. Stephen May and four or five forwards. No wonder they got burnt on the turnover this year, worse than any club in the comp.
I thought a shining light, there weren't too many, but I thought Ben Ainsworth was really good, particularly towards the end of the year.
Yeah, he's he was a higher pick, wasn't he?
Number four he was taken in the draft, but he's got a bit of mongrel about him. He likes the goals, he kicks the goals.
Isn't it funny? We'd remember an Ainsworth back from when we started following football, the polar opposite. Remember Jeff Ainsworth?
Jeff Ainsworth,
Geelong?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have seen a goal on a month of Sunday.
No,
a sort of a dour, no-frills defender. But Ben, I wonder if he's related, is, instinctively a goal kicker. So something there. Good point. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we continue our climb up the ladder with the Blues. Another interesting one. Half full, half empty type of analysis there. This is the Father's Day edition of Inside Football. And don't forget, if you're going to the local footy, make sure to pick up an old favourite, the 4-20 pie. Before the game, during the game, half-time, after the game, they taste the same. They're famous for good reason.
A US Open update for Northern Jeep Bundoora, Australia's number one dealer. Largest selection of Jeeps, all with 5-year warranty and lifetime roadside assistance. Visit Northern Jeep Bundoora today.
Well, a big day session has just wrapped up here at Flushing Meadows. Brett Phillips coming to you from the US Open, which means the night session will start 2.5 hours later than normal. The latest we've ever gone in New York is 2:26 a.m. That could be broken with still Roger Federer and Feliciano Lopez and Elena Vesnina and Madison Keys to play. 23,000 standing out in the rain waiting to get in because Rafael Nadal has just won his way through to the fourth round, 6-7, 6-3, 6-1, 6-4 over Leonardo Mayer after two women's three-set matches on centre court today. Wins to Carolina Pliskova, the top seed, and the American Coco Vandeweghe, who has spoken to myself just a short time ago and will be our very special guest on the first serve tonight after 10 o'clock, of course, coached by the Australian 1987 Wimbledon champion in Pat Cash. So still a big night of tennis ahead, but Rafa is through. Roger just needs to play his part against Lopez. He's got a 12-0 head-to-head for them to meet in a semi-final towards the end of next week. That is the latest here from the US Open.
That was a US Open update. Thanks to Brett Phillips. Welcome back to Inside Football. Mark Fine here with Troy Zantuck, and a lot of interest after we've done Brisbane and Gold Coast. Just on the Gold Coast, comments were made off the SMS. Jared Lyons did have a great year, and so did Jared Witts. So it was a couple of Jareds, both recruited to the club at the end of 2016, that really were the standout players. And I think they've had their best and fairest. Who won their best and fairest, do we know?
Well, you're not going to believe this, Finey, but Gary Ablett.
Yeah.
Gary Ablett.
It was tipped that it would be Gary Ablett. Well,
number four for the Gold Coast Suns, number four BNF.
You know what? In the past, there was rumours that clubs used to tamper with BNFs based on player movement and also player contractual situations, because a lot of contracts are tied to BNF results. Well, full credit to Gold Coast. I don't think that there was any tampering there. And Eric Hipwood, a lot of discussion. Not saying that he's not promising. But 172 possessions in 20 games is the base that he needs to work on. He started in 2015, played 10 games, averaged under 10 per game, and actually slipped back from an average of 9.5 per game to 8.15 possessions per game. He can't have a season under 10 possessions a game if Brisbane are to make a serious move up the table. Let's have a look at the Blue Boys.
11-16 SEN, Inside Football, full-on footy analysis.
To be fair, I think we should understand that the competition is a lot more even than people realise, and you can look too deeply into ladder positions all the time. But we thought in the first half of the year, because we had a bye, it was a chance to restock, that we're in some games late. There'd be three or four games that we're potentially in front in the last quarter and couldn't complete it. So it's pleasing that our guys dug deep and got a reward for effort. I'm really, really happy for them because they've been trying so hard. Our supporters should see that. They would appreciate it that we've been in games late in quarters and haven't got a result, and it's just a great reward for effort to finally get one.
And that was Carlton's best win of the season over GWS in round 12. A win that might really be telling when it comes to GWS's season, as they look as to how they lost a home final. And they need to look no further than Carlton. So the Blues, with that late win over Hawthorn, at least they address the second half season slump, which would have been potentially cause for a wooden spoon. In the end, it wasn't, but there was a chance that it was going to cause that they were headed for a wooden spoon. And I think that win over the Hawks at Etihad Stadium just put the brakes on a disappointing end to the season and lets them focus on the many positives that came out of the year, Troy.
Yeah, I was interested to get your take, Finey, on Brendan Bolton's coaching. I think he's drummed in the defensive side of the playing, and obviously I think Blues supporters are looking forward to them hitting the scoreboard next year.
Spot on. There's only so long. It's a honeymoon period for new coaches, and when a team is unsuccessful, you get the honeymoon period of competitiveness and of hard-fought wins, but football now has to be won. It can't be saved. The days of the mid-2000s, where low scores can take you all the way to the premiership dais, are gone. Adelaide, have a look at the top of the AFL table. It's owned by teams who love to score. Richmond's improvement this year came from the mindset change. And I think Richmond, for many clubs, are the shining example of what can happen with various changes at the club. Collingwood, we see, have retained their coach and are changing his support staff, a la Richmond.
Oh,
and Carlton are probably going to look to Richmond as a team that were high possession retainers in terms of short kicks in the back line, and their metres gained were slow and non-decisive in 2016, and this year they get the ball hard and fast into a forward line that relies on the drop of the ball with their small forwards. And Carlton would be a different proposition, because with the retention of Casbolt, they'll be looking to hit marking targets in the forward line, Harry McKay to develop, Curnow to develop, but they would look to move the ball more quickly. So it's a really good point. The results that they've got in Brendan Bolton's first two seasons are encouraging. Let's not forget they played most of the second, or a chunk of the second half of the year without Cripps, their best player.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely right. You've got to take that into consideration. I think they had multiple Rising Star nominations. I'm just loving the work. He is the business, this guy, Charlie Curnow. He just...
Where do you think he plays his future football? I know that he's been a centre-half forward, but he's got the Bontempelli
Could
build.
Could you play him in the midfield?
Oh, I would. I'd play him like Bontempelli. I'd play him in the midfield with half an eye on the forward line if they're not functional and kicking enough goals.
He's got the long levers. He's a beautiful kick, a beautiful kick to position.
I like him moving. I really like when he gets rolling and moving. And I just think the midfield gives you the freedom of... We spoke about Hipwood before. It's not easy being a young, any sort of target in the forward line in the modern game. So to be able to roll into the midfield and, you see, he can bob up back in the forward line. He could be at centre-half forward and kicking a goal before the opposition coach knows that he's folded from midfield to forward. It's a great asset to have.
Might get in trouble for saying this, but I see a little bit of coup de fides about this bloke.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do, but Kuda played in a time when it demanded that he played midfield for most of his career. I reckon we...
But just his movement?
Yeah. I reckon we split the time between midfield and forward. And as I said, get him back in the forward line under the guard of the opposition coach. So he's kicked one already, and you sort of think, oh, well, who was on him in the midfield? No, he's actually folded back into the forward line. You do that twice a game, you've got those two goals, and you've got 20 possessions out of the midfield. You're a match winner. Oh, it's a great asset to have. I guess the downside for them is wasn't quite the second year for their champion defender. The star turned from the year before, the number one draft pick. I'm trying to remember his name. Wiedering, of course.
Jacob Wiedering.
That season.
Well, he had the second year blues.
Literally. He just...
Was he injured for most of that second half of the year?
No, I don't think so. I think it was just he'll bounce back. I think there was a level of confusion for the kid with where he plays. He started up forward. He's a backman. Leave him down back and he'll continue to develop into one of the game's best. Marchbank was a great player.
I think going
he got
forward,
injured.
Yeah, Marchbank's going to be... The star of the future.
Yeah, they've got Marchbank. Rowe got injured. He's a good serviceman, a good soldier. He's got another year contract, which is good news for him.
Doherty had another tremendous
Doherty year. Deserved his All-Australian selection. And Plowman, a good serviceman. So I think the back line needs to continue to be functional rather than spectacular, which is what they are. Jared Pickett went back there later in the year.
He looks...
A bit of spark.
Provides a bit of spark. And the Renaissance, he got 10 goals kicked on him against Buddy, but he played some good football, Liam Jones.
Yeah, I don't know if he's in their best back line. Because that's, Wiedering and Marchbank.
Will come
Plowman,
back,
Doherty. Liam Jones, it was a fairy tale story, but Carlton could have better options, which is great news for the Blues. Time to have a look at North Melbourne.
11:16 SEN, Inside Football, full on footy analysis.
A lot of things happen that can go either way, and this round's tending to serve that up a fair bit. It's been just a remarkable round of footy in terms of the results and the way those results have unfolded. So, yeah, we're obviously bitterly disappointed, but in terms of the bigger picture, it's... We got back on track, which means the bigger picture is where we want it to be.
Brad Scott there after their loss to the Bulldogs, round 20 at Etihad Stadium. Brad Scott remains as coach. The team does not get Martin. Did anybody really think they were going to get him? They're not going to get Kelly. Kite flying has been an exercise done most commonly at Arden Street in recent years. They were trying to get Treloar and were quickly out of that race.
Yes.
You name it, they've missed out on them. They're going to have to go with what they've got. And it wasn't terrible by the end, but they do need definitely to inject some speed and some exuberance into that midfield.
Absolutely. After the clean-out that they had last year with all those champions going, you had Brent Harvey, Drew Petris played some good football with the West Coast this year, finally. Nick Del Santo and Daniel Wells was a massive clean out.
Yeah, and they said there's more to come.
And more to come.
Yeah, so watch this space on Jared Waite, on Lindsay Thomas, on Scott Thompson. I'm not saying that these players are done and dusted, but there are more to come. Lockie Hansen, I think his papers are stamped.
Andrew Swallow, how did you see his year?
Great fight back. But they need a different type of midfielder to complement him. what Wells would have given it, he played every week, is what they need every week. So North Melbourne are not going to get the big ticket items. They're going to have to draft Kennelly or maybe trade with a view to adding to that midfield. We're going to head to the news when we come back. Going to be joined by Johnny Ralph. More teams to look at. More analysis to be had on Inside Football, the full-on look on footy. Happy Father's Day, Dads.
On 1116 SEN, Inside Football, full-on footy analysis with Adam Cooney and Mark Fine.
Well, welcome back, Inside Football, and Troy Zantuck comes in for Cooney. Zantuck for Cooney, famous football name. Troy, brother, of course, of Shane. And we've been looking at the teams that didn't make it. We'll get back to that task shortly, Zanners, because every Sunday morning, I'm sure you're familiar with the dynamic of John Ralph joining the program.
Certainly am.
No football this weekend, but there are some injury watches as we head into the first week of the finals. And, of course, contract talk has been central to football discussion this week. And what is the knock-on effect from Dusty Martin recommitting to the Tigers? John Ralph of the Herald Sun joins us. Happy Father's Day, Ralphie.
And to you, gentlemen. Had a lovely Father's Day breakfast early on, but we're into the office as we speak for a massive month of footy ahead.
Let's start off with Joel Selwood, and images on the TV last night suggest, by the smile on his dial, that he'll be right for the game against the Tigers.
It really is extraordinary. Look, I know that we've come a long way in terms of the medical practices, but you know, even 6 weeks ago when he did that syndesmosis, or 4 weeks ago, which is the high ankle sprain, even the doctors out there, the likes of Rowan White and Peter Larkin, says there is no chance of him playing. Well, as we speak, what, 4 or 5 days out from that Friday game, he seems a certainty. Got through some training yesterday down at Geelong, did a little bit of full training and joined in towards the end. He'll wrap it up and have a final fitness test on Wednesday. I think he'll be named to play and almost certainly will play. Now, clearly not 100%, but according to Joel himself and Steve Hocking, the club's footy boss, yeah, he plays. It really is remarkable given it's going to be 32 days after an injury that, look, we've seen some players have come back from 6 weeks from, but most players take, look, 10 or 11 or even 15 weeks in the case of Mark Murphy.
Ralphie, the talk of South Australia, the Rory Sloane appendix.
Yeah, and this is another one that will probably confound all medical wisdom, but 9 days after having his appendix out, he looks certain to play as well in that qualifying final against GWS. Now, look, according to the medicos out there, look, it's not often done, and even Eddie Betts says that he wouldn't have felt comfortable coming back in that amount of time. And as he said in the press today, he felt really tight, felt like he struggled to run. You know, he did have a couple of stitches in there, but you're not opened up like you would have been as a youngster. You certainly have a keyhole procedure. So according to Pete Larkins, that you would feel, that you might knock open some stitches if you get another knock. You would feel discomfort. You know, you might bruise around the area. But certainly with that appendix gone, you're not at any risk of any further damage. So it's really very much a pain management of the discomfort thing. So Rory will almost certainly play. Now, we had a couple of players in Talia and Tex Walker who had some time off in round 23. So, look, they'll really ramp them up this week to try and get them to match fitness. But it looks like, well, certainly they will play. And even Hugh Greenwood, who was, was seen to be dropped in round 23. And a lot of people were a bit surprised by that, given his fantastic season. The club later said he was only managed. So, look, I wouldn't think that he's in any doubt of coming back as well. So they'll have, look, three pretty handy inclusions and almost certainly Rory Sloane playing as well.
So that means that almost certainly a play that I thought was very good in round 23 doesn't play, but Paul Seedsman stands at the ready.
Yeah, that's right. Look, it was exceptional, wasn't it? We know he's got, you know, line-breaking abilities. You know, he's had his issues in terms of form and injury and finally got his way back in. Look, you think he's probably the one, though, isn't he, to drop out? I suppose this is a month-long campaign for Adelaide, although I'd hope it would be. And so even if he misses a qualifying final, doesn't mean that he won't be, you know, back into that side. But, I would think he's nominally the bloke who would miss out.
I've got to say, I think I've just seen one of the funniest tries I've ever seen in rugby league. And now I'm not sure who the player was, but there was a Melbourne Storm player. It looked like the ball was Velcroed to his top. He fell down. And
Josh Addo-Carr.
Was that Josh Addo-Carr? That was one of the strangest things I've ever seen. He got up and the ball was stuck to him.
And he just sort of grabbed it and ran off with it. That's a great idea.
And everyone was just waiting, and everyone thought he'd been tackled, and he hadn't. He just got up and just popped the ball over the line.
Looked like it was Velcroed. That's a great tactic. Essendon had three players not play in that final win of the year over Fremantle, and Hurley expected back. What's the story with Hooker, who withdrew, and the one that I think all Bombers fans are sweating on, Orazia Fantasia?
Yeah, it wouldn't be Orazio without the old-fashioned race against time. Yeah, look, I mean, you would think that all these guys are probably likely to play, but there's some real doubt about all three of them. Fantasia had what the club was diagnosing as a six-week hamstring when he did that, and everyone thought, well, they're going to have to play multiple finals. But certainly he did some training on Friday and a little bit yesterday. Look, I suppose the issue would be, do they play him at 80% or do they play Begley, who, look, was really impressive on debut a couple of weeks back. Hooker, he has not a calf injury per se, but bone bruising in that leg. And so, again, that's more of a pain management thing. You would think he would be he'd be right, having been pulled out in round 23 as a late exclusion. And Hurley's the calf. Now, so he did he will be 3 weeks back from a minor or grade one calf nick. Now, he did some training yesterday, some kicking in the rain out there at Melbourne Airport. He didn't look amazing. He didn't look like he was doing full strides. And so, look, I would think all three of those guys are still yet to pass their fitness tests. So we'll be out there all week and assessing their prognosis. Look, you think they've got to be at their best to beat Sydney, which would be why they might lean towards pulling the trigger on Fantasia. But still, he'll be 5 weeks out from a hamstring. And look, they clearly need their two, well, both of them named as All-Australian defenders 3 years back, one of them in this year's side. You would think that they would want to play all three of those players, and yet still there is a fair bit of doubt on them all.
Much has been spoken about Chris Main this week, Ralphie. How do you see his future at the Caringbush?
Look, I think he's going to stay there. I understand that Nathan Buckley on Friday morning on SEN said, look, you know, there was some confusion and we're going to have to have a discussion with him. Look, the interpretation from that, and I think the only one you could take out of it, was that he was saying, look, we're going to pay him out. He didn't specifically say that, but clearly his dad has come out in the last 24 hours and been quite vociferous on Twitter about how his contract has been handled. Look, having spoken to people around Chris, he's absolutely determined to stay at that football club and trying to prove Nathan Buckley wrong. Look, the AFLPA says that the only way you can pay a player out is to do just that, and yet you still have to have that salary cap on your list. You still have to pay the player. So there's no real advantage to it. You certainly can't do it against the player's will and try and, you know, minimise the amount of money you would pay in the next 3 years. So, look, Main was serviceable, kicked a couple of goals and had 15 odd possessions in the VFL yesterday. Look, I still think if they want to do what Nathan says they want to do, which is to increase the forward pressure in that side, I got to find a way to play Chris Main. Now, it might not be that he's going to be a megastar, but maybe you got to give him 4 or 5 weeks. Maybe you got to make him an organiser in that forward line. Nathan Buckley was the bloke who wooed him. He whispered those sweet nothings. And Chris Main said, this bloke's a gun. I want to play for him. And then Nathan dropped him after a couple of weeks. And so, yeah, I would think they would have to have a discussion about the way forward. But I would think right now Chris Main feels like Nathan Buckley's walked away from him. And that's not great for a coach who's only just signed a contract extension, last Monday.
Apparently the confusion was with Gubby Allen, and Buckley was under the understanding that they were getting the Main player from Fremantle. He thought it was Fife.
Nathan Fife.
He thought it was Fife. It turned out to be Chris Main from Fremantle.
Yeah, $2 million, cheap as chips. Yeah, we'll take five for that.
Yeah.
Well, look, I understand that Nathan a couple of times now is sort of, you know, on footy classified, and again on Friday, sort of, he's insinuated that, look, you know, that Graham Allen railroaded this deal through. And that might well be the case, but what Chris feels is that Nathan was absolutely compulsive in his argument to him, said, look, you know, these are all the exceptional things you can do. I want you at this football club. Now, you know, maybe Nathan was doing it because Gubby Allen said to him, I really want you to sell this argument. And maybe Nathan was never really that keen on him. But, but it's not true to say that Nathan didn't forcefully present to Chris and say, come across here, we've got a 4-year deal for you, even though Chris had a 3-year deal at Fremantle. And look, you know, even he, there's no advantage for him to be paid out now, because look, he'd be friendless at the trade table. No one wants Chris Main anymore because he hasn't played any games of football. So, yeah, I think the only way forward is for them both to tough it out and try and find a role for him next year.
At GWS, Jacob Hopper stays. What does that mean as they look to get
ink on Kelly's contract?
Yeah, look, I know a lot of people will say now, gee, they've paid him $400,000 or $450,000, Hopper, which is a really good deal for a player 2 years in. But look, I think they've always had that 2 year deal worth $800,000 a season for Josh Kelly. Too many Kellys and Hoppers out there. Look, people have said, are they increasingly confident? Are they less confident? Look, having spoken to people within that club, I don't think they really have any idea. They feel like, or those close to Kelly feel like, if he wins the premiership, I think he's probably going to come south, potentially to Carlton, potentially to St Kilda. I think if he misses that premiership, he signs a two-year deal. Devin Smith is the other one. He's been offered something like $500,000. He's keener to get maybe $600,000. Feels like he's an undervalued player at GWS. So, like, I think they have the money that has been offered to all of those three players. I don't think that the Hopper deal dramatically impacts Kelly. I think him holding up a premiership cup at the end of the season, that's the thing that's really going to draw him back to Melbourne.
And Dusty Martin, what's the knock-on effect from that now famous seven-year deal?
Oh, that is extraordinary, isn't it? Look, I don't think it's as much as $1.3 million. Look, I think he's left maybe $2.5 million on the table, which to me says that maybe he's on a deal of just under $1.2 million. I think what they would have done is said to themselves, OK, have we secured our key position stars? You know, and they have. Have we secured all the priority targets? And they have. They've got Rance and Edwards and Dustin and Cochin and Jack Riewoldt, all signed from between 2019 to 21. And so, look, they know that at some stage there, someone might offer a Reece Conqueror or a Brandon Ellis or one of those guys, you know, a more significant deal in years to come, and they might potentially lose that player. But again, I just keep coming back to that equation that if they had to pay an extra $100,000 to Dusty, it's not going to cost them the flag. But him departing to North Melbourne, well, I think that potentially costs them a premiership window. So, look, it was a really smart decision. Ralph Carr just played them beautifully. But that's what, you know, smart and cunning agents do.
It's been a tough three decades and more for Richmond supporters. But all of a sudden, it's a good news club. It's not bad being a Richmond supporter, is it, Ralphie?
Yeah, no doubt about that. But look, you know, I know it's not it's not like Geelong and Hawthorn, in that Geelong and Hawthorn became destination clubs, and not only did everyone want to go there, but they wanted to go for less. Now, quite clearly, Richmond had to pay, you know, what many would consider overs for Dustin Martin. And, you know, look, I think, you know, with a club with five key pillars in place in terms of those, you know, stars, not many clubs have got that many stars. You know, I would hope that in the next couple of years, the likes of Castagna and, as I say, Ellis and Boston and, you know, all these guys, Corey Ellis, would want to stay as well. And so maybe Richmond will say to themselves, okay, having secured our stars, these guys are going to want to play for Dusty, with Dusty. They're going to want to play in premierships, and that might save us a little bit in the end. You know, maybe that's wishful thinking, but that's maybe the strategy Richmond's had to have in trying to keep together their star factor.
Anything to keep the ravenous army happy, and this anything, everybody agrees, was the right rein pulled. Ralphie, have a great Father's Day, and we'll catch up following four big finals next Sunday morning.
Thanks, boys, and won't we have so much to talk about then? Can't wait.
John Ralph there, Herald Sun, Fox, 1116 SEN. If you're going to the local footy today, why not celebrate dads, mums, kids with the most famous pie of all? Make sure you pick up a 4 and 20 as soon as the game starts at halftime. Even after the end of the game. You know the taste. It's familiar because it's the best. 4 and 20 pies. By the way, on the Father's Day theme, Zan, is your father, the daddy-o, a famous part of Tuesday night's Initially Speaking, a big cheerio out to the daddy-o.
Good on you, Finey. Yeah, big cheerio to the daddy-o with a radio.
We're going to take a break, and when we return, head through our look at teams who've called it a season in 2017, and we return with the team with the most controversial coach in the game, the Fremantle Dockers, Rossi's boys.
I think it's self-evident in a sense. We haven't been performing at a level required, really. Internally, we know there's some challenges with what we're doing. I think we had 8 players under 10 games, or 6, and 8 under 20. So I'm not sure how they looked, but from our end, that's where our improvement needs to come from.
Ross Lyon there on the back of loss, unfortunately,
by 104 points to Richmond at Subiaco. And this a coach that coming into season 2017 had never experienced a triple point loss. Well, he's got the triple, I guess, because he did it three times, or his boys did it three times, against Adelaide by 104 points. They got annihilated by GWS by 104 points, I think, and then, was it GWS? And then came back to Subiaco to lose by 104 points before showing a fair bit of character in the last game of the season. Might not have been GWS. Who did they lose to in the third last game of the season? I'll check that up. But regardless, it was a year of promise early. It's funny, you know, Zanna's, Troy Zantuck in for Inside Football. Sometimes a greater indicator of a team's fortunes is their percentage, not their win-loss record. And early on in the year, even though Fremantle were getting through with some, you know, wins of character, the win at the MCG against Richmond Monday after the siren, that was a good win. You looked at their percentage and knew that something, you know, I think we had a NQR there, not quite right.
A false dawn.
And in the end, the false dawn was that forward line. Cam McCarthy dropped for the last game of the season. And they now need to get into trade and drafting period and try, and especially with Mitch McGovern recommitting to Adelaide, so no gift of the return home of a McGovern. They've got to find some other way to functionalise their forward line, because at the moment it's probably, I would say, heading into the break, it's the forward line of least functionality in the competition. Sydney was the team they lost to 100 by 104 points, and that was at the SCG.
Just on that forward line, Finey, the signing of Shane Kirsten from Geelong.
Yeah, he's a third forward, isn't he? You know, at best, he was having to play second forward. Another example of a player that doesn't get the ball enough. But, you know, by the time that Cam McCarthy's form had petered out, he had about 2 weeks of really good football. And I think one of those weeks might have been the win against Richmond at the MCG, striding up and down the MCG, getting ball, kicking goals. It faded. It was like a dropped icy pole on a 40-degree day. It melted. His form melted quicker than that. And you can't rely on Kirsten as a key forward.
And he signed a three-year deal.
Yeah.
So.
And I don't mind. I think people would be understanding of Kirsten's role in a team. He can finish off nicely, but he's one of those players, and I say this not deprecatingly, you close your eye. He plays Macy's football near the boundary line, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he's not a front and centre forward. He works off what's left, you know, after other options have been.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on.
After you've fully explored all your other options, you might go to Kirsten. Oh. Sorry, that's how he plays his footy.
Just on some of the positives for Fremantle this year, I thought the early part of the season, I thought Bradley Hill was dynamic.
He was.
With his run.
Yeah, no, very good.
And the latter part of the year, young Sean Darcy in the ruck. He looks like he's
ready
to
go. You know, with the one-year deal offered to Sanderlands that might be part coaching, part playing, to replace Sanderlands is nigh on impossible. But they've got a hard-working, potentially, a Mumford-type ruckman.
Yes, I thought that when I first saw him, I thought Mummy Junior.
And people look at Mummy as sort of a bust-em-apart type ruckman. But what Mummy always did best, which is actually why GWS are maybe struggling a bit at the moment, because he can't seem, his body's not letting him do it, is as soon as the ruck contest is over, he becomes a midfielder. Hands and knees type footballer, Mummy. And Sean Darcy has that in him, doesn't he?
Yeah, but you need those awkward type footballers.
It's great that they get on their hands and knees, that they're at the drop of the ball, that they quickly go from ruckman, like Nankervis, to a midfielder. The problem with Nankervis for Richmond is he's not tall enough to win a hit out. Mumford and Darcy are, but they're not scared to roll their sleeves up, you know,
good.
Get their hair mussed, and yeah, they're good footballers. So he came out of nowhere. How about Luke Ryan? What a good story out of Coburg.
Yeah. Fantastic, and you know, went to the School of Hard Knocks and went through the hard way. And great to see him playing senior AFL
football.
Beautiful
judgment.
He has got very good judgment.
Yeah, can read the ball well in flight. And the other good news is, What an interesting dynamic we had. Three footballers who basically backed their ability to inflate their price at the start of the year. Three stars, Martin, Fife and Kelly. Martin sitting at the poker table, hung on, and got the big payout. Kelly, even more so, when you consider that Kelly was a very promising... We almost forget, at the start of the year, Kelly played a lot of football last year off a halfback flank running through the midfield. He's had such a great year, Josh Kelly. We almost forget that he was not a superstar midfielder at the start of the year.
No, he was a rebounding halfback flanker.
He was a potential superstar midfielder. Yeah. But he has become so good in the midfield, you almost forget that that was not his role coming into the season. So his play has been correct. Nat Fife, he blinked. Because halfway through the year, the return from those serious broken leg issues seemed to be limiting his mobility, his ability to get from contest to contest, and he accepted the Fremantle offer, the long-term offer that I think falls short of $1 million a year or maybe even around that mark, but he certainly wasn't able to get the cream on top. No sooner did he sign. Did you know in the last 9 games, he was named Fremantle's best player 8 times?
In the last 9 games?
Yeah. So, you know, he did blink and maybe cost himself some money, because I think he proved in the second half of the year that the real Fife is still a genuine footballing commodity. And what team wouldn't have loved, you know, especially when Martin went off the market. I think Fife, he could have got the $1.3 million a year.
Well, if you've got
but
them,
he blinked.
Yeah. If you've got them lined up in the schoolyard, finally, who do you pick?
At the moment, Dustin Martin.
Yeah.
But that's at the moment. We know that Nat Fife...
But Kelly's potential is, to me, out of this world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're all delightful prospects. But prospects, with Fife, it looks like he's building back to his best. Kelly looks like a long-term superstar. Oh. At the moment, you can't tackle Martin. He's winning games. He could win the Brownlow with a record number of votes. And people are suggesting he could get up to 40 votes this year. He could average close to 2 votes a game. Well, we could see something pretty special come Brownlow medal night. Fremantle, what do you see their future? Look in the old crystal ball, my friend.
Yeah, oh, look, I've got them bottom four for next season.
Looks fine. Tough with that forward line, doesn't it?
It does. The scoring power, as you alluded to at the start of the show, yeah, it's worrisome.
Well, somebody asked, why is Ross the most controversial coach in the comp? Only because he's so divisive. Some people mark him as just a great coach. Others see him as somebody who's fallen short in winning teams' premierships. The way he left St Kilda was controversial. And even this year with his the Brad Hardy incident with the suggestion he might go to Collingwood, remains controversial. And we're going from the man that I mark as most controversial to certainly the man most talked about in coaching circles this year. It's time to look at Nathan Buckley's Collingwood.
11-16 SEN, Inside Football, full on footy analysis.
Right up there. It was a really plucky performance all day. We good energy and good heat from the first siren to the last, and a bit of execution hurt us at times. And there were some two-goal swings, probably 3 or 4 two-goal swings where it looked like we were going to score, and then we gave up goals down the other end. And going into three-quarter time, we had one, you know, with 2 seconds to go, which could have scuttled us and could have, you know, ripped the guts out of us. But, you know, the belief in the players was still strong, and we were able to hang in there, and that was enough.
Maybe the win that, if it didn't save Nathan Buckley, the loss there might have been a bit of a nail in the coffin. It was at Etihad Stadium, around 18, over the West Coast Eagles, and Collingwood remain a fascinating case study, don't they? The last round of the season, they defeat Melbourne and deny the Demons a spot in the finals.
The draw that they had with Adelaide was, what an incredible game that was.
So there were times when Collingwood looked right up to it.
They did, and look, I think there's a lot of upside with the Magpies. Taylor Adams, I thought, had a tremendous year. Just interested to get your thoughts on two debutants this year, Finey, Callum Brown and Josh Dacos, very famous names at The Magpies.
Yeah, it was great to see that they were given some time at the end of the season and, you know, they were involved in that great win against Melbourne. Both of them had football in them. You know, the great qualities of their fathers are yet to appear, but that will come for Callum as his body matures, and he'll be his own footballer anyhow. I watched him yesterday in the VFL. He remains a very good player at that level. And Josh Dacos, nobody's going to have the wizardry of Peter Dacos, but sort of almost like Jack Silvani and Steve Silvani, there are echoes of the father, and those echoes are exciting for football fans and certainly quality enough to consider that they're going to have good AFL careers. Very pleasing from all of those families' perspectives, the Browns, the Dacos family and the Silvani family, to know that their kids look like they're going to measure up. And that's where we're at.
And just on another family, another very famous family, Darcy Moore, where's his best position?
It's funny, you know, he played some football off the half back line in the game against Melbourne and he read it beautifully.
He looked good running at the ball.
Yeah, he did, but you know what? That's obviously easier. It's obviously easier playing off the half back line than it is playing as a forward, and Collingwood need more forwards.
But he hasn't had that support structure, has he?
No, because Chris Mayne that we talked about with Ralphie hasn't worked. Jesse White didn't work. And as much as Ben Reid is a good big body up there, his body sometimes lets him down, Ben Reid. And he's always going to be one mismatch away from being pushed down the back line anyhow. He's a luxury up forward. Collingwood need to find somebody to play down there. But look, at the start of the year, Darcy Moore struggled. Well, I think after five or six games, he only had a couple of goals. That's no return for a key forward. I really thought he finished the end of the year as a pretty commanding footballer, either through the forward line or down back, not necessarily smashing the scoreboard. But remember we spoke about Danaher and his first couple, two or three years and what he's developed into. I think Darcy Moore is tracking favourably to being one of the star forwards of the game. I really do. We see something each year from Darcy Moore, and he's going to be a wonderful footballer. The Pies, I keep saying it, they need to find their best 22 and expose that 22 to as much football together as possible. Certainly a back six needs to play together. You have a look at premiership teams, and what sides try to do is settle their back six. Cohesion through the back line comes with familiarity. And for Collingwood, they have been unable to do so under Nathan Buckley. Too many changes swung. Sometimes you ask whether they're changes for change's sake. I mean, Lyndon Dunn was a nice servant this year. But Nathan Brown, the incumbent, showed in his time at St Kilda.
He did, yeah.
Was there really a need to move those deck chairs around?
Interesting you say that, but sometimes players need a change to reinvigorate their career. Sometimes they can get a bit stale at the one club.
No, you're right. You're
right. I think with the Brown case, finally, I think second chance, last chance at the Saints, something to really play for.
Yeah, I agree. I agree entirely. Mm. But that probably is indicative of a flaw in the coaching. You know, if you need to go somewhere else to get the best out of yourself, then, and it happens in football, as I say, Collingwood desperately need, and look, with Nathan Brown and Lyndon Dunn, it's a moot point because they're both 30-plus. And there is definitely, in the case of a Lyndon Dunn, at the most, one more year. And Nathan Brown as well. But they need to start to settle that back line. I think we know that Jeremy Howe
is a ripper. I was
going
to mention him. He was, he was outstanding this year, wasn't he? Very unlucky to miss the All-Australian.
I think an oversight, an injustice. Really, and I don't need to name players. There was a player who started the season late. Now, Jeremy Howe played well from round one. How can not playing put you on even footing with, I'll say it, how could Hibbert have had a better year than Howe when really I certainly didn't see him play better than Howe throughout the year, and he started off later than Howe. I don't know.
Would the argument be through Hibbert's strength of possessions?
Yeah, well, that's...
No, but this is what I'm putting forward to you. I'm saying it's not right.
Yeah, Jeremy Howe, I think, pays the price of being a spectacular mark sometimes.
Yeah, but he isn't a one-trick pony.
Not at all.
That's the beauty.
Not at all. He's
that's
a,
the beauty
he,
of it.
He's a good, desperate defender. And he also is a good kick. Oh, I just think he hit new heights this year, Jeremy Howe. Collingwood supporters will tell you they've missed out on best, you know, All-Australian teams and teams of the century from day dot. They don't have a single player in the Australian football team of the century. So, yeah,
so they've copped it again.
Yeah, so they'll tell you that it's a dynamic they've grown up with. But I'll just say that Jeremy Howe was dang unlucky. The reality is that back line now has Schaarenberg in it.
Yes, and he improved as the season went on, didn't he? I think he's feeling more comfortable in his skin. You know, he had a horror run with injury.
Yep.
So he uses the ball well.
But there's so many, and I went through it with a Collingwood supporter recently, there are so many players that are not terrible and definitely deserve more football, but is it at Collingwood? And there's just so many of them that we have question marks over. When you have a look at the list, and I can run through it very quickly, it's a team that is still yet to define their best 22 and best 26. So, and I think they're the two areas you look at. What is James Aisha's future? Jared Blair, I think, has another year at the club, but is he part of the best 22? Tim Broomhead, where does he sit? Ben Crocker, we know, has been unlucky through injury. Alex Fasolo is a very good player, but is he part of that best forward line going forward? Tyson Goldsack is ageing. Where is Levi Greenwood placed in that team in terms of position and importance? Lockie Keefe, where does he sit? Where is Chris Mayne? That is now a public conundrum that plays out in the media. Adam Oxley, is his future with Collingwood? Jackson Ramsey, Henry Shade, Ben Sinclair. Josh Smith took a step back this year. Josh Thomas ended up in the ones, looked quite good. Varko goes on, I believe, for a year where Jesse White doesn't. And is Rupert Wills persisted with? That's a lot of footballers.
Just on that list, there's a common thread in those names. They're all about the
same size. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So they're not bad players. They could have futures elsewhere. Wheat from chaff. That's what Collingwood need to sort out. We are going to take a break. When we come back, up the ladder we go higher with the Hawks. And that's what a lot of people think they'll be doing in 2018. Get your analysis, Zanners, and off the SMS as well, further analysis. And just one, plenty of SMSs coming through. I can see development in Moore, but not in Hipwood. Spot on. That's exactly right. Moore has developed on as a player. And as I said, even though only 2 years with Eric Hipwood, year one, 9.5 possessions, not enough. Year two, averaging 8.1 possessions. That's different to Darcy Moore's graph. They're going in different directions. Hopefully Hipwood picks up and gets more touches in 2018.
16 SEN, Inside Football, full on footy analysis.
We just were able to execute the basics of the game just a lot better than last time we came to Adelaide, and we just scrambled. It wasn't a particularly pretty game, but there was lots of pressure. You know, Adelaide are a very, very good side, as their ladder position indicates. So we needed to compete really well there. Their midfield is really, really strong, so we needed to try to negate that as best we possibly could. You know, Jacobs is a powerhouse in the ruck, and you know, Slane's one of the most impressive midfielders in the game. So they do get good supply, so we needed to really compete well in that part of the ground.
Hawthorne, famous win over Adelaide. The Hawks started the season, well, really worse than the Sydney Swans, even though they were above the Sydney Swans because they did get a win in the first 6 weeks of the season. They had a couple of terrible losses to the Gold Coast, up on the Gold Coast by over 80 points, to St Kilda in Tasmania, a former fortress, Huge loss down there. Shredded by two teams that are not top eight sides. In the case of Gold Coast, two losses during the year. By the end of the season, Hawthorn had virtually rebuilt, whatever you want to call it, a recalibration. The different looking side by the end of the season with players previously considered forward playing down. Beck Gunston's new role playing across the half-back line, being a possession winner through running through the centre of the ground, marked him as a very different footballer. And when you looked at the end of the season, Troy Zantuck joining me for Inside Football, when you looked at the end of the season and saw Jager O'Meara playing some nice football in the last couple of games of the season, and then projected and just imagined O'Meara playing a full season with Tom Mitchell, Cyril Rioli back in the side, Grant Birchall off the half back line, Stratton potentially playing as well, maybe Frawley. We wait to see exactly how that back line looks, because in the absence of Frawley and Gibson, Caden Brown developed. Of course, we saw Ryan Burton become a star turn. So not guaranteed that all of these former Premiership champs are part of the team, but I don't think anybody would underestimate Hawthorn in 2018. Ben McAvoy had a great season, resurrected a career that was potentially going to be coming to an end at 2017 with a new contract offer. Even Ruffy. Jared Ruffhead ended the season. Well, we know, of course, the backstory and the most important element of the Ruffhead story is his return to health. But then to see him at the end of the season in that game against the Bulldogs in the last game actually show some Ruffhead of old. You start imagining a forward line with O'Brien, some aerial strength, Sicily providing huge drive again in a different position through the half-back line, maybe even pushed up to the wing when Birchall comes back, but a magnificent kick of the ball. And you start seeing Hawthorn quickly mixing it with the big boys in the eight again.
Well, I think you've summed it up beautifully, Finny. A masterstroke, a stroke of genius from Alistair Clarkson, the reinvention of Gunston and Sicily, throwing them into the back line. You know, both beautiful kicks, great overhead and smart. They got the football smarts. You've got to give him so much credit, because as you said, they look like bottoming out at the start of the year, Finny, with those 86-point losses. They were in diabolical trouble.
It was amazing, wasn't it? The number was the same, and the die had been cast. In fact, from that point, you know, they lost Birchall for most of the season. From there, Stratton, things were potentially going to get worse, not better. But Alistair Clarkson is a master tactician, and it was brilliantly done. So Hawthorn, watch this space. Let's move on, and this time it's the Saints.
11-16 SEN, Inside Football, full-on footy analysis.
Really pleased, great footy. First half was as good as we've played for a long time. Yeah, it was really pleasing. We rate Richmond really highly, and it's for Dimmer to talk about them, but I reckon it's fair to say they probably weren't at their best. But I'd like to think that we contributed to that with our pressure, with the way that we went after our own footy with or without the ball in a really strong manner. So from that point of view, yeah, really pleased.
Now that was Alan Richardson after St Kilda's best win of the year. That were really best half of the year by any team almost, as they put Richmond to the absolute sword at Etihad Stadium. But the highs and lows for St Kilda fans, well, you just think of that moment and then think of the last 30 seconds against Port Adelaide when the season finals hopes became...
Like called Robbie Gray, slotted probably, one through.
Probably put the sword to St Kilda's final hopes. They end the season an 11-11, and really for some people that's probably where St Kilda sit. Without a star turn through the midfield, it's a midfield that worked hard. David Armitage didn't play for the bulk of the season. And they look next year without Riewoldt to McCartan, but McCartan is totally unproven at the level. And there are two question marks. There's a question mark on his durability because of concussion issues. And then even with those resolved, is McCartan an AFL footballer? Glimpses say yes, but other more protracted periods without the ball say no. And optimism, it's a real glass half full and half empty with McCartan. But as I said, two watches on McCartan: availability and then ability. So St Kilda, and Armitage adds to the midfield, but it really doesn't solve the problem of breakaway speed and just the class that turns games. The good news was the back line functioned well with Carlisle and Brown. But
I thought complimenting those two, Finey, I thought early doors, Dylan Roberton, outstanding with his rebound.
Yeah, he had a very good season and recognised with All-Australian squad selection, which is in and of itself now a
feather in the cap.
Correct, and Seb Ross was likewise given that honour. So definitely a big year of improvement for Ross. St Kilda's two recruits in the midfield, Stevens and Jack Steele. Steele certainly add a tackling ability, and he can hold his head up high. Stevens less consistent throughout the year, but again, a similar type, a bigger body, but St Kilda really, and a good point here, what is St Kilda's brand after the high pressure goes missing? And what we saw from St Kilda this year was, even in games comfortably lost against the Dogs and a couple of times against the Sydney Swans, they come with that high pressure game, and if the opposition is able to resist it, then St Kilda, who really prey on the turnover and the panic caused by the high pressure, which worked so well against Richmond in the first meeting, if they can't get a handle on their opponents and cause a turnover, they don't seem to have the ability by foot to move the ball themselves. So they start chipping it around and it quickly gets shut down. They're a team that relies heavily on the turnover, and a forward line that, on top of all those issues, is probably the worst kicking forward line in the competition at goal. Bruce unreliable, Billings a beautiful kick unless he's lining up at goal, and the other forwards, bar Membry, who's a good kick, probably not skillful enough.
Because when Billings was drafted, Finey, correct me if I'm wrong, he was rated one of the best kicks in that draft.
He's still a good kick, but unfortunately, he's not at goal. So St Kilda at 11-11, probably tell the tale of a team that is treading water and needs a lift from somewhere. Let's look at the Doggies.
11-16 SEN, Inside Football, full-on footy analysis.
Let's get straight back into the Bulldogs and, well, when you're the reigning premiers and you miss out on the eight, and pretty comfortably in the end, it's a disappointment, isn't it? It can only be marked as a season, hopefully, of hangover.
Well, was it totally unexpected, Finey? I just think they squeezed every bit of juice out of the lemon last year.
Yeah, look, I mean, players would be disappointed as a group to see improvement in so few. Bailey Dale, of course, who wasn't part of the premiership.
Well, he was the shining light as far as improvement
and
goes.
McLean, I think, showed. McLean and McRae.
Oh, McRae was.
The Mac attack was pretty good this year. You can't deny it.
Yeah.
But. Libba.
Yeah, well, he just didn't fire, did he, this year?
No, he did not fire. So, too many players and. The sort of shenanigans that happen at the selection table on a regular basis with Luke Beveridge that worked so well in 2016 did not work last year. And I just wonder, when you drop a player for a team striving for a premiership, that creates excitement. When you drop a premiership player, that creates resentment. They're going to have to look at it. They're going to have to look at a number of things. Stephen Martin, a potential recruit.
That'd be a very good pickup.
Wouldn't that be? Because
let it free up. Jordan Ruffhead.
Scant respect for the ruck, I think, cost him throughout the year. We've got one more team to look at, the D's. Don't forget, if you're going to the footy, it's a 4-20 or nothing, really, today at the local footy. The famous pie. Grab one straight after the game and make yourself a favourite with the favourite pie. Grab a few for the family. The Demons, of course, and poor old Melbourne. I mean, you know what? It's a grand old flag. It's a high-flying flag. But it is, for Melbourne supporters, a sad story of what should have been. It really came down to that last game, didn't it?
Well, they had everything to play for, Finey. Really, if they couldn't beat Collingwood in that last round, you know, I've spoken to many Melbourne people, did they deserve to be in the final?
No, exactly right. They had a final before the finals. Their form leading up to it was sketchy. They'd lost their best form. I think Jack Viney is an important player for them, and it's not an excuse as to why their form dropped off, but their on-field leadership certainly lacked a beat. I've got to say that Max Gawn had enough time after coming back from hamstring to play better football than he did by the end of the season. Hogan was just a tragic, unlucky story throughout the year. 6 goals the week before, does his hammy early in the game against Collingwood. Mark it down as a season from, you know, Anis Horribilis, and hopefully he gets back on track. We've got to call it quits. We're going to hand over to Kevin Hillier for a great afternoon of sport on 11:16 SEN. Grab your 4 and 20 pie. It's the best rat's eye in the business. Don't worry if you're at the local footy. You're on a good one. Thank you, Zanners.
Thanks, Barney.
Happy Father's Day, dads. Keep putting up with us mums, and I promise you the dividend will be okay.